So today my talk is called You Can't Hold On to Stillness, Practice in the Midst of Activity. So most of the time when we think about our practice, in addition to just like studying teachings or whatever, we think about meditation. We think about simple, mindful activity, like our slow walking meditation, or, you know, mindful activities like being present when you're, you know, washing the dishes or eating or these kinds of simple activities. And hopefully you all have experienced some degree of spaciousness and stillness and silence through those practices. A sense of appreciation for an awareness of being alive, an awareness of being aware is something that we cultivate. Gives us perspective and groundedness, and most of us feel like, you know, our daily meditation practice or coming to the Zen Center regularly to sit is a very, you know, it's a very important part of our practice, helps us feel more sane. But what about more active, complicated, mental, social tasks, which frankly form the bulk of our lives? Many people feel, myself included, it can be very difficult to continue the thread of practice into and through activity. Especially the busier it gets, the more complicated it gets, the more planning it involves, the more interactions with other people it involves. So I will return to this, but my point today is that you can't hold on to stillness in the midst of activity. So that kind of stillness and silence that we cultivate in meditation and simple mindful activities is just, it's not something that we can bring into activity. That's kind of an oxymoron. So, because our states of mind and body change, and the idea is not to be identified with any of it. And it's taken me a long time to give up the idea or the hope that I can hold on to that kind of perspective, that kind of awareness of being aware, that relative equanimity that I can often enjoy in meditation or simple mindful activities while I'm going about my daily life. But as I am converted gradually to a different way, then of course I see it's been there all along. Usually when you have a deep insight, then you're like, oh, that's what the Zen masters were talking about, or that's what my teacher was talking about. So it's not that they weren't saying it, it's just we weren't accepting it, we didn't quite get it yet. And what's been there all along, I'm sure there's many other teachings that could apply, but is Dogen's teachings to the Tenzo on joyful, nurturing, and magnanimous mind. So I will return to those. So this is obviously at the forefront of my mind because last week, when many of us were at session, which started Tuesday night and ended Sunday noon, I was the Tenzo, or the head cook. And so myself and my assistant Tenzo, Jinryu, we were on our feet for 8 to 9 hours a day. I'm proud that I got Jinryu into the Zendo in the afternoon for a little bit, but for the most part, we were only there in the evenings. So it was, and we each spent like at least 20 plus hours preparing ahead of time, shopping. Everybody else got to the retreat place on Tuesday. We got there Monday night in order to unpack groceries and set up and be ready. So there was lots of details. There were plans to make, decisions to make. There's clearly an agenda. You're making this food. You got to make it in time. You got to get people fed. You need to move quickly. You have deadlines. And frankly, we're not professionals. I mean, if you did this you know, this was your job. It might be kind of just a second nature kind of thing, but it's not. I haven't done it for like 12 years, and it was Jimmy's first time. And we don't have a professional setup. I mean, we went out to the commercial grocery store on TV Highway, the smart grocery, whatever, where you can just buy stuff in big, you know, boxes. And, you know, and then we're looking at our cars like, okay, so, and they ask if they're, you want help loading in. We're like, I think we just got to work on this. So it's like, you know, taking potatoes out of a bag and putting them, you know, on the floor of the passenger area, and you know. So we're winging it. We're troubleshooting and improvising as we go. Partway through the week, the oven, we realized the oven didn't work. It could only go to 500. You couldn't adjust the temperature. So, and as I looked ahead, there was like, ooh, there's a lot of things we need to bake this week. And we're like, whoa, okay, what do we do? So one night I didn't even make it to the Zendo because I drove to Newburgh to get an extra slow cooker so we could move things around. They ended up getting us a new oven within a day. But, you know, it was that kind of like, all right, how is this going to work? So, you know, you might think, anybody might think, they look like, okay, there's that Zen group going to do their retreat, and here's, you know, all these people, here's 30 people in the Zendo, you know, meditating, cultivating stillness, and, you know, perhaps sitting and cultivating stillness more than they would actually like. And here's these two people busy in the kitchen cooking for them. So clearly these two people in the kitchen just, you know, they just sacrificed being able to have a retreat in order to, you know, help these other people do it. And it will all take turns sacrificing our retreat. Aha. But no, not in Zen. So Dogen wrote a whole, so he's a 12th century Zen master. He wrote a whole fascicle, a whole essay on instructions to the head cook. So in it, he describes going to China where, so he had studied Buddhism and actually even gotten ordained in Japan, but Soto Zen was not in Japan yet. And he, I mean, he didn't know anything about Soto Zen, but he wanted to go to China to explore more and find, I don't know, find the Dharma he was seeking. So he did, and when he gets there, one of the first people he meets is an old senior monk who's a Tenzo at a monastery, and he's traveled to town to get, I think, some mushrooms that for the next day's meal. And he's, Dogen's intrigued, and he says, you know, you should stay overnight, and like we should talk more. And the Tenzo's like, I got to get back. And Dogen asks, Honorable Tenzo, why don't you concentrate on, because this is clearly a senior monk as well, why don't you concentrate on Zazen practice and on the study of the ancient master's words rather than troubling yourself by holding the position of Tenzo and just working? Is there anything good about it? The Tenzo laughed a lot and replied, good man from a foreign country, you do not yet understand practice or know the meaning of the words of the ancient masters. This is Dogen. Hearing him respond this way, I suddenly felt ashamed and surprised. So I asked him, what are words? What is practice? The Tenzo said, if you penetrate this question, how can you fail to become a person of understanding? So most of us think like Dogen, right? Activity may be necessary, and we may even enjoy it, but it's really not ideal for practice. It's kind of interferes with practice. It's really hard to practice in the midst of activity. Family, traffic, work, projects, planning, socializing. So most Buddhists I know carry at least a small sense of inadequacy and sadness about their apparent inability to carry that thread of intentional practice into the demanding lives, into their daily activities. So what is practice in the midst of activity? Which really begs the question then, what in a broader sense is practice? And this isn't an easy question to answer, which is why the Tenzo said, if you penetrate that, you are a person of understanding, or as we might even say, a person of practice, where you've just really become practice. So I'm going to offer an answer, but ultimately each of us has to answer this for ourselves in the course of our daily lives. What does it mean? What does it mean to carry the thread of practice? What is it we really want? What is it we're looking for? But it's important that we challenge our own ideas about practice and try to learn a way to practice that isn't limited to the special, quiet, meditative parts of our lives. So I think of practice in a deeper sense for myself, and I think each of us has our own kind of our own words, our own ways of describing this that inspire. For me, it feels like a deeper sense of wholeheartedness or wholeness, of not being divided or conflicted. Rather than being divided against ourselves, we want to know we're okay, that we're not cut off from real life, from worthiness, from intimacy, due to our shortcomings, our flaws, our mistakes, our sins, whatever. Rather than being conflicted in our energies and intentions, we want to know what we're doing is good and right. We want to be able to embrace this moment wholeheartedly instead of being preoccupied with past or future. So Dogen's three attitudes help us practice this wholeheartedness in activity through great busyness, competing responsibilities, interactions with other people, even through barely controlled chaos, which is what it sometimes feels like in a Zen kitchen. These three attitudes Dogen recommends to the Tenzo have the potential to get stronger, broader, and richer the busier we get. So, the three minds. Joyful mind is the mind that rejoices. It's full of gratitude. He describes in the Tenzo Kyokan the Tenzo thinking, I am fortunate to be born a human being, to have this opportunity to serve the three treasures. When we have joyful mind, we're not comparing our tasks. We're taking satisfaction in our work, whatever it is. For the Tenzo in particular, if you've ever done the meal chant and it mentions the three virtues and six tastes, the three virtues are lightness and softness. I don't know why each virtue has two descriptors, but lightness and softness, cleanliness and freshness, precision and thoroughness. And the six tastes, there's different lists of six tastes, but one of them is bitter, sour, sweet, hot, salty, and delicate. Delicate. And the Tenzo is supposed to, in the Tenzo Kyokan, it's not just like, you know, get the food on the table and get people fed. Also supposed to cultivate these virtues. The food's supposed to be good. It's supposed to look good. It's supposed to taste good. It's supposed to be varied in texture. You don't use the same ingredient in more than one dish. You don't use the same ingredient more than once in a day. All the dishes aren't supposed to be mushy and orange, you know? Like, one of them should be different if it's one of them's mushy and orange. I mean, this is the ideal. Sometimes things don't turn out quite how we hope or expect, but... So how wonderful I found it to be. I feel, you know, as many of you know, I have a lot of energy. I'm bustling around, straightening cushions and doing all kinds of stuff all the time. And when I'm Tenzo, I feel 100% used. There is no extra. There's no extra for bullshit. There's no extra for self-concern. It's like just, yeah. And I find it exhilarating. You know, how wonderful that I still have the capacity to do this. Someday, probably not. There's a lot of details to track. That I have the stamina to stand on my feet for 9 hours a day. that also won't last forever. That the eggs turned out fluffy. That there's this brilliant recipe for putting eggs in a glass casserole in a really hot oven and then stirring them every 10 minutes because the eggs around the edge get cooked, and then you mix, you scrape it off the sides and mix it in, and you can cook eggs, scrambled eggs, pretty good scrambled eggs for a whole bunch of people really quick. So we're not comparing. Dogen describes a refined cream soup is not necessarily better than a broth of wild grasses. When you gather and prepare wild grasses, make it equal to a fine cream soup with your true mind, sincere mind, and pure mind. This is because when you serve the assembly the undefiled ocean of Buddha Dharma, you do not notice the taste of fine cream or the taste of wild grasses. The great ocean has only one taste. So he talks a lot about not changing your investment or your effort based on the ingredients. Like, well, today we just have soggy, you know, something or other to serve. So, oh, but now we have some really expensive stuff that we can use, you know, not to basically bring that kind of joyful dedication, no matter what the circumstances or the ingredients. And this can be challenging. It's challenging to find joy in certain tasks and jobs. But, you know, the practice is the same whether it's easy or difficult. I mean, even if we're in a demeaning, stupid, boring job, if we can find some joy in it, we find some relief. It's a little better if we can take some joy in it. You know, if we can take some satisfaction in, I don't know, I remember working in a factory over one summer at college, and just, you know, like, there would be 6 shampoo bottles shrink wrapped together, and they needed to go into a box, and the box would move along. And there was this little satisfaction in just being able to, like, learn how to do it so I could just go, you know, really, there, you know, we can kind of take joy in any small thing. And you probably have met people who are doing jobs that you would hate, but the joy that they take in it is just infectious. It's just, you know, you feel lighter and happier the whole day just because, you know, somebody, you know, pumped your gas and was like, yeah, have a good day. You know, they seem like they're having a good time out there. So then there's nurturing mind. So Dogen describes it as, or it's also kind or parental mind. Just as parents care for their children, you should bear in mind the 3 treasures. Even poor or suffering people raise their children with deep love. Their hearts cannot be understood by others. This can be known only when you become a father or a mother. They do not care whether they themselves are poor or rich. Their only concern is that their children will grow up. They pay no attention to whether they themselves are cold or hot, but cover their children to protect them from the cold or shield them from the hot sun. So when we're cultivating nurturing mind, we shift the focus off of ourselves, how we feel, how we like our task, whether we're going to get the result or payoff that we like. And hopefully nurturing mind will happen in conjunction with joyful mind, so we don't just feel like a martyr. And I think he brings up this example of parents because this nurturing mind is a responsive mind. It's a attentive mind. So it's not about like, boy, I'm dreaming up the most wonderful thing that I can do to benefit others and they will be so appreciative. You know, sometimes that's nice, but a lot of times that doesn't turn out exactly how we hope. And it's really responding to needs in a very natural way that does the most. So if we get our self-concern and self-consciousness out of the way, compassion and generosity will flow through us naturally. And when that happens, it's invigorating and connecting. So sometimes I am just... and Jinryu talked about this as well, like, so you you know, spend a couple hours getting this meal ready, and you get it in dishes that can be passed down with some relative ease down the long tables, and you found utensils to go into it, and you found hot pads to go underneath it, and the condiments and the everything, and it's all ready, and then we do the meal chant, everybody serves themselves, and all right, now, you know, it's the moment of truth where everybody lifts their bowl and takes the first bite, you know, and when it's good, I mean, I'm often just like moved to tears. They're just like the joy and the satisfaction is just so so sweet. And I think about all these people who just, you know, sat frequently in pain in the zendo for a couple hours. Maybe it was hot. Maybe they felt still and happy. Maybe they felt miserable. But now at least they have some good food to eat. And I have heard more than one person say, I have thought about, I was really thinking about leaving, but then I thought, what's for lunch? So I myself, you know, there's really few other pleasures. We were at a very beautiful spot, so, you know, walking around and looking at nature was one of the pleasures, but there's not a lot of pleasures at Sichuan. So, you know, taking some joy in the food is lovely. I mean, and again, this isn't easy. I can sit up here and talk, you know, oh, a joyful mind, a nurturing mind, wild Tenzo, but that's where a lot of these practice roles, they are set up to help you cultivate these minds. You're set up to succeed, kind of, in a way that's kind of, it can be more challenging in the course of your daily life. I find it really hard to feel joyful and nurturing when I'm cleaning my house. I just can't, it's very difficult to let go of the conviction that I should not have to do that. That just should not be on my list. That there are so many other more important things to do. That is, and it's just me and my husband. Like, you know, who is this good for? This is, has to be done all the time. So I tend to walk around resenting my housework. But once again, it's like, if I can take some joy in it, if I can think of this as, you know, making my home more comfortable for the people that come to it, then some of my suffering will be relieved. And there was a neat practice. I believe it was Pat Ankyo O'Hara in one of the books that we read, but I couldn't find it, where she described a practice of when she finds herself saying, I have to do something. I have to go grocery shopping. I have to go visit my mom. I have to da da da. To flip it and say, I get to go grocery shopping, I get to visit my mom, I get. And when you do that, then you think of like, yeah, I'm alive, I'm healthy enough, I have some money to go grocery shopping, there's food on the shelves, this isn't a war zone, like there's actually, you know, you get to go grocery shopping. So finally, then, Dogen recommends cultivating magnanimous, or great mind, while engaged in activity. He says, great mind is a mind like a great mountain or great ocean. It does not have any partiality or exclusivity. You should not regard a pound as light or a ton as heavy. Do not be attracted by the sounds of spring or take pleasure in seeing a spring garden. When you see autumn colors, do not be partial to them. And just as a side note, I always think of this as like with the Fukanza Zengi talks about not taking, getting excited about a spark. I mean, what he's talking about is not so much not enjoying these things, but like, you know, that's what our happiness depends on. And then there's kind of a sadness and a longing to hold on to it. You should allow the four seasons to advance in one viewing and see an ounce and a pound with an equal eye. In this way, you should study and understand the meaning of great. So, great. So this is not one I find so easy. I think of it as not getting overly upset about things, but not by you know, rigidly holding on to a particular mind state. I am not going to be upset. It feels like instead magnanimous mind is about, you know, being bigger, being large, allowing things to flow. So this session, I was thinking about it as like staying upright and afloat, like a good boat, even when the sea is rough. And it's about releasing the tightness of anger in order to let situations keep flowing. Or taking a deep breath and remembering a larger perspective instead of just being caught by the challenges of this moment. You know, so there were a number of times last week where I was, you know, there's five different things competing for attention. You know, time is running out. Some things are not going as planned. You know, we slashed those eggs and they went over the bottom of the oven and started burning. And we didn't know whether they were going to be done by dinner at lunchtime or not, whether people might just be standing around, you know, 30 people just standing around. Because the dining room and the kitchen were the same room, standing around waiting for lunch, or serve them runny eggs, which is, you know, pretty gross. So, you know, we're wondering about that. And then there's like, you know, water spills, and we never had enough pot holders. And it would just be like one thing too much. And I'd just be like, you know, feel this rising of irritation, pressure, irritability, perhaps a few mild cuss words in one or two occasions. And I would feel it, but in this practice, I didn't fight it or argue with it or feel ashamed of it. It felt like trying to ride it, like trying to stay upright, like that boat, or maybe kind of like a surfboard. because I didn't want to stop the flow. I didn't want to stop this task or get in the way of the work with the joyful and the nurturing mind. So then the wave would pass, and actually the whole thing felt kind of exhilarating. Like I managed to survive, you know, all of this stuff coming so quickly, you know. Now, some people don't seem to have that much of a problem with equanimity. And if you're one of those people, I say that's great. But please be patient and accepting for those of us for whom it is more difficult. We're all wired differently. And I would say sometimes the tendency to get upset comes as part of a package that includes some other stuff that is very good and beneficial, like a lot of energy for getting stuff done, an appreciation for efficiency, the determination to do a good job. So, you know, that also comes. My teacher helped point that out to me when I was like, I still get all this irritability. She's like, well, it's kind of who you are. And then when you run into stuff, you know, that's going to arise. So I was like, oh, okay. Not like a mortal sin. It's just kind of, well, this is kind of what comes along with who I am. But I think most of us get upset in the midst of our daily lives, probably more than most of us realize, because we're all trained to hide it. And I say, rather than seeing ourselves as inadequate, we can try to bring this joyful and nurturing mind in a way to this magnanimous mind as well, if we're doing it in order to stay fruitfully engaged. Can we really care about the work we're doing and throw ourselves wholeheartedly into it, but then not overreact to setbacks? Can we let the momentum of our activity keep flowing and just flow around the obstacles like water? And it helps to avoid self-judgment and emotional repression if we embrace that magnanimous mind and the spirit of love and service. Not, you know, don't get upset because then you're a bad person. You don't get upset because it tends to, you know, put a stick in the gears. It tends to, you know, stop that flow that we want to do, participate in. So I hope you will explore the practice of fully embracing activity with joyful, nurturing, and magnanimous mind. And let go if you are fortunate enough to have experienced this kind of self-conscious awareness that's possible in meditation and in very simple mindful activities like Thich Nhat Hanh's eating an orange mindfully, you know, now I am smelling it, now I am peeling it, now I'm pulling out a slice, now I'm eating it, you know, that's lovely. But that can't be maintained in the midst of lots of activity. That's a different experience. So instead, simply try to be wholehearted and undivided in whatever you're doing. So you can maintain that thread of real, meaningful, beneficial practice, no matter the activity, no matter how busy. So that's all I have to say. Thoughts or questions or comments?
Well, I do want to say that I had a little teeny tiny epiphany
after session, because some may recall that I was caught up in the phrase in a poem that we read, face each moment without an agenda. And could not figure out for the life of me how to do that when I did have an agenda a mile long in terms of onions and eggs and spinach and bread and all the other things we or potholders, dirty dishes. I just didn't get it. Two things happened, really, and the first one was the very next day I looked back and I thought I was far more aware than I thought I was. And the other thing, I woke up Monday morning thinking about this very same thing, and then I thought, well, you know, this whole thing about the sacred act of being present for each moment of an agenda, that's in the instructions for Zazen. For working in the kitchen. So I really appreciate the talk about, because that is one of the things, reasons why I took the, or why I asked for the position, and that is, how do I get from here into everything else? So I really appreciate the talk in that sense, and I appreciate experience I had in that sense. And a
lot of it. That one. You mentioned the term one taste. Mm-hmm. I've mostly heard that in the Tibetan tradition. How do you define it? How would you say something to clarify what that means?
Yeah, I mean, I have no idea really what Dogen meant. I guess in that context, I would. Maybe the taste of suchness, the taste of how everything is really precious just as it is. So even if the eggs were slimy, you know, like, yeah, but look at this. Look at this life. We're alive to eat and to regret and to be repulsed by slimy eggs. I mean, just, there's a aspect of our reality that is like that. That then in a way, yeah, I mean, even at the same time, we're also asked to, you know, think about the tastes and take care of food and all this kind of stuff. And ultimately, just one taste.
one is good. The eggs were perfect.
Everyone's like, I mean, like, mental note, like, when you're cooking for 30 instead of, you know, 5 or whatever, everything takes longer. Do not. It said it was going to take 45 minutes, and it was a recipe for 30. But don't even leave an hour. Leave an hour and a half, and then keep the eggs warm in the oven. That's what I recommend. Anyway.
Yeah. The other comment I wanted to make was that the brilliant thing was that you said, oh, before we sat down, I didn't salt the eggs. We weren't a salt. I forgot to salt. Or I didn't have time, so we didn't have time to salt the eggs. So we all knew when the comments came by to salt the eggs.
I know, because it was so disappointing when you eat something and you realize, oh, kind of eggs with no salt, and we're like, all of that work? Because then the salt doesn't come back until the second.
Right. Like, then you just get to eat it that way.
Thank you.
So, whether it's wild grass or whether it's the cream, you treat it with the same reverence. How about when you eat? Mm-hmm. So you make a lot of effort to have 5-6 tastes. Three virtues, but as practitioners, when we actually, I mean, instead of looking for that perfect thing, you just appreciate what you get. What about that part?
I think that's ideal. For myself, I have very strong preferences. So when I'm eating food, I mean, usually if I've made my own food, I like it, but, you know, at other sessions, I think I've told people about the story about getting the unpeeled squash in my bowl and just being so, I had this, you know, litany inside, like, here we are, you know, like, you're just making yourself miserable by these preferences, and da-da-da. But I feel like sometimes we can't, that is part of what's going on at this moment as well. Like, I cannot, through sheer force of will, make myself like that squash. However, in a bigger sense, I can see the suchness of this very moment of me being at session and eating the squash and hating the squash and my mind going like it. I mean, there's a way that we can kind of be with and accept and flow, including our own reactions and mind. Does that make sense? I mean, if you can let go of that preference and just appreciate it, I think that's great.
I wonder, because, you know, there's a particular monastery that I look at that Tenzo, the Tenzo's list for that. I mean, it is so, she uses all kinds of sauces and all kinds of, this is crisp and this is this, and I'm thinking, what the heck, you're just meditating, why? You know, like, why do you have to be so particular about the meal? I'm conflicted about that, because it seems self-indulgent.
Well, I don't know. I've seen exposed to a bunch of different ways, and I sit session out of Great Bow quite a lot, and I mean, they tend toward the let's minimize the labor that the food takes, let's minimize the complication, so that, you know, we're fed sufficiently and that's good, and there you go. I mean, and then, you know, and then you're not distracted by the food, right? You're not like, wow, this is so yum, I'm gonna take some more of this. Okay. I mean, that's a way, and that I respect it. It's a way, I have to respect it. So I think you could go to extremes, but you're supposed to keep things not too expensive as well, so it's not like, you know, we go out and like buy all kinds of really expensive sharp cheddar or, you know, whatever kind of stuff. So you're supposed to use fairly simple ingredients, but I don't know, maybe this is one of the ways that Zen shows love and joy. I mean, we're kind of subtle about it. Maybe too subtle about it, but there's a certain kind of what my husband, who's, he'll go ahead and be more opinionated than I am, and he just says, they're just not showing any respect for the food. I'm not saying I totally agree, but you know that there's a respect that can be shown there too.
I think it's very Zen, because the forest monks will just eat whatever you put in their bowl, right? And they don't fast with that. The Buddha himself did that.
And so yet the lay people giving them the food, they're probably not thinking like, well, whatever. I mean, they're just going to accept it. Just they probably are like trying to make it good. Like, you know, if they're going to make an offering to the monks, they try to make it good. Do you have any thoughts about our Tenzo tradition?
Well, I was going to thank you for the talk, because I think the Tenzo, the teaching of the Tenzo and your talk just invites that, that really central koan of how do we expand practice, develop more and more of our lives, how do we integrate it, and that sort of tantalizing koan of stillness and activity that gets thrown out. So I appreciate kind of the fun talk about it, and like the Tenzo gives us these ways to sort of approach it, which it is a central koan, right? And for me, I think when I touch those moments, it's the words that come to mind are harmony and alignment. Mm-hmm. And I heard you say after session too, I feel 100% used, like that phrase stuck in my head, I feel 100% used as Tenzo. At session, I remember looking out at everybody, because you can see everybody at the top of the hall there, and it's like, they're leaving it all in the field. Love it. And so it's just this 100%, 110%, and that you don't feel divided. And I think Precept's point is to that this feeling of nothing extra, no place else to be. Like behind the scenes, for me, the retreat was a lot of list making, right? A lot of list making and watching that schedule. And so, but that feels like 100% undivided activity for the good of others. Even, but you're not really thinking that, you're just doing it. You're just doing it, just all in. And I feel like Zazen, I was trying to think that, I really do connect that thread of Zazen. The theme for me last week was nothing extra, nothing extra, nothing extra. So nothing extra in Zazen, nothing extra in the effort that I'm bringing, or the nothing extra that is like self-attachment or me wanting something particular or response or have a certain way or what does nothing extra. So there's a lot, but I love how like the Tenzo teachings and the specific of working in the kitchen gives you like a toehold into that mind. Like how do I, like I've been given this inadequate carrot peeler and 10 pounds of carrots. How do I approach this with nothing extra, full-hearted activity, and just do it, right? So anyway, I just love that. It's like, just like Zazen is like our very specific way of cultivating the mind, this is like all the work practice in Zazen gives us that total, I bring that to it. Anyway, there's a lot in that. This is something I really appreciate. Your thoughts on that. It's great. It's an aspiration story.
One thing I'll just add to it, and I heard you say it, and I heard Shintai just say it. Another reason why I wanted to try the position was I had been Jisha before for 2 years, and I loved service to the teacher. I loved that. And so this was an opportunity to try service for a lot more people. And so that goes into it as well. I know it manifested itself. I can't say exactly when or how. I know it happened the first time when people were arriving. This incredible gratitude I felt for cooking soup for 30 some odd people. So there is a love aspect to doing it, if you step up to doing it. If you want to step up to doing it wholeheartedly, as you say.
did anybody find this, you know, that you're able to bring some of this to your daily work and activities? Mm-hmm. Sense of wholeheartedness and undividedness, which it's going to feel different. Mm-hmm. Like, I know it, I write, I organize, I'm working on websites, I'm working on spreadsheets. I'm like, what is mindfulness when you're doing that? So most of the time I'm working with my mind. So what is it then? You know, how can I be wholeheartedly working on a spreadsheet? You know, as opposed to nothing extra or nothing held back or nothing extra.
The phrase that keeps coming to my mind is playful curiosity.
Hmm.
It makes all of this, it takes a lot of seriousness, perfectionism. I'm going to be playful and curious about it. I can remember once spending an entire day in the Excel spreadsheet, closing at the end of the day and coming back the next day and it was gone. Oh, now that I know how to do it, this is going to be easy. You know, it was like playful curiosity.
Well,
yeah.
It wasn't my first reaction, but first reaction is you're going to shoot. But yeah.
Yeah.
This conversation, your discussion, reminded me of something that happened when I was in teacher preparation program, and I had to take art for teachers, and we had a really great teacher, and she started the class by saying, the Balinese have a saying, we have no art, we do everything as well as we can. And I liked it a lot, but as you talked today, and you talked about not too much, I was thinking that my experience with Zen and my practice is that I'm invited to take on an attitude, but it's not an easy attitude in the sense that it can, if it veers toward excess or pride or, you know, some venial sin, or if it's too much economy. And so, certainly, I was thinking about the difference between great vow food and, you know, this Tenzo perspective, and that is that I seem to be consistently invited to adopt an attitude, but not necessarily attach to it. And so I really appreciated the talk, but it also brought me back to how I can get in extremes about either way, a frugal economy versus a full effort.
Yeah, always the middle way. And as you're speaking, I'm realizing, yeah, I can picture a situation where there's a Tenzo who's getting just too fancy. And the, you know, the teacher or the abbot saying, you know, simplify it, not so much, you know, if you were like, yeah, such a great Tenzo, and, you know, we only serve really divine food here. I mean, fortunately, I've never been that skilled, like, it's never gone to excess, like, you know, just managing to get the food and have it taste okay is all I've managed to do, so. Well, thank you all. Oh, got one more. All right, Richard.
I was just going to say, great vow. For some reason, I was in the kitchen today. I hadn't figured it out. But I work with different Tenzos. And it's always been I've always enjoyed it. I mean, for me, it's a refuge.
And
especially if it's a crummy session. I mean, you just have a shit time, and then I just, oh God, this is great. And then I uncut that, and I just, oh, this is, and I'm relaxed, and just everything just boils down. So it's perspective, you know, it's just,
And I don't mean to say in any way that they don't treat the food with respect. That was my husband. But it's just a matter of degree, right? It's just a matter of, like, we're a little more on the end of willing to take more time and energy and money to make it a little fancier. But yeah, the spirit of it is still.
You can feel the heart of Potenza when you're working in the kitchen. And it's really, it's a precious thing.
And that's another part of it, you know, treat how the people who come through the kitchen feel. And during that work period, that's another part of that practice. If you are joyful, if you feel nurturing, if you have a sense of magnanimous mind, then that is communicated. If you're, like, stressed or, you know, annoyed or, I don't know, overwhelmed or whatever, then people are going to feel that. So, yeah. Well, thank you all.